I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
It's nothing new that women in sport are treated unequally and face an uphill battle against sexism. But the stunning success of the U.S. women's soccer team offered FIFA a roadmap to a better way of doing business. A cleaner way, a less corrupt way, a more fair way. They didn't embrace it. But women's soccer still offers FIFA a chance to crawl out of its dark past. The hope for a better tomorrow. That's what today's story is all about. I'm Connor Powell. This is Episode 11, Equal Footing. In May of 2013, the Lords of Soccer gathered on the remote island nation of Mauritius off the coast of Africa for the 63rd FIFA Congress. The meeting opened with a 16-minute-long series of dazzling and colorful choreographed international musical performances befitting of the most ambitious of Broadway shows. Then, Sepp Blatter was called upon to officially open the meeting.
Gives me a great pleasure and an honor, ladies and gentlemen, to now call upon the president of the organization that has been referred to as the guardian of our most precious game, the president of FIFA, Joseph S. Blatter, to officially welcome all of us here. A round of applause.
Describing Sepp Blatter at that moment as the guardian of soccer was ironic at best.
Welcome to the delegates to this 63rd Congress of FIFA.
On Sepp Blatter's watch, FIFA had stumbled from scandal to scandal. And as president, Blatter was awfully close to the center of many of the accusations. As those bosses gathered in Mauritius, the stink of corruption had only grown stronger in recent years. Blatter and FIFA felt growing pressure to institute reforms. Or, you know, at least look like they were. So after 109 years, the lords of soccer decided it was time to allow women into the club. The plan was to elect the few ladies, as Blatter liked to say, to FIFA's executive committee and get a much-needed public relations win. But Blatter, with his proclivity for making inappropriate comments, couldn't even execute this PR stunt. In his attempt to praise Australian Moya Dodd, one of the three female candidates up for election to FIFA's executive committee, Blatter found a way to offend.
You have a candidate, and a good candidate, and a good-looking candidate.
As Blatter giggled about Moya Dodd's looks, the camera cut to Moya Dodd, who maintained a stone-like stare. You know the type you put on when you're seething with rage inside, but you don't want to show it? And FIFA's president wasn't done putting his foot in his mouth, though, sadly, there's no audio of this moment. After Dodd, Lydia Insekera, and Sonia Banami were officially named to FIFA's executive committee, Blatter stood at the podium and yelled,
"Say something, ladies. You're always speaking at home. Now you can speak here."
It was typical Blatter, and typical FIFA. Even when seeming to do the right thing, it became clear FIFA was doing it for all the wrong reasons. As a global nonprofit, FIFA's mandate is to support soccer around the globe, not just the men's game, but also the women's. Of course, it's always put the men's game first. FIFA did organize the first Women's World Championship tournament in 1991, 61 years after the first Men's World Cup. That 1991 tournament has been described by some as a silent trigger, one that set in motion the modern women's game. And there's some truth to that. In 2019, more than a billion people around the world watched some of the Women's World Cup. And that is a massive leap forward compared to that 1991 tournament that was only carried live in China and on tape delay in the US. But the road to today's women's game is marked by decades of sexism and short-sighted greediness. You're going to hear about how FIFA created and maintains a system that has forced women to battle and claw for the scraps of FIFA's largesse. All while the lords of soccer enrich themselves. It was a run-of-the-mill conference room. You know the type, with rows of foldable chairs and tables, coffee in the back. The room was full of sports apparel executives, everyone hoping to strike a deal. In the months before the FIFA Women's World Championship in 1991, that nondescript conference room is where Michelle Akers found herself, on a stage in Arizona in front of the Sporting Goods Manufacturers Association.
I went and said, "Hey, we need your support."
25 years old at the time, Akers was already one of the top women's players in the world, probably the best. At nearly 6 feet tall, Akers ruled the soccer pitch, playing as physically dominant a game as anyone, man or woman, in the sport. Yet, Akers was a virtual unknown. Support and commercial opportunities for the women's game were non-existent. FIFA and its regional federations had ignored women's soccer for decades. And as a result, so did pretty much everyone else in the sport, especially the sports marketing and apparel companies. Even though the U.S. national team had just qualified for the World Championship in China a few months later, Akers was struggling financially, like all the women in the sport. Akers begged the suits in the room to support her, her teammates, and Team America. She told me she pleaded, "Please, invest in women's soccer.
We need U.S. soccer. We need all the corporations and people in soccer to support our team because we're going to go win a World Cup." And they laughed.
There was nothing funny about it. And nothing funny about how ill-equipped and cash-strapped the U.S. women's team was. A few months before Akers launched her plea for help, she and her team had traveled to Haiti. Desperately poor, politically chaotic, and dangerously unsafe Haiti. The Caribbean nation was in the midst of years of political upheaval that included assassinations and coups. But CONCACAF, FIFA's North American Federation, shrugged off the dangers and decided to hold its qualifying matches for the 1991 FIFA Women's World Championship on the troubled island. Akers says it was as awful an experience as you might expect. Even now, it's hard for me to believe anyone in soccer thought Haiti in 1991 was an appropriate place to hold an international tournament, let alone the first women's qualifying tournament.
We stayed at this hotel that was surrounded by really high cement wall, like maybe 20 feet high with broken glass and stuff at the top. The water was off, on and off all the time. The electricity was on and off all the time. And of course, you couldn't drink the water. We basically jumped in the pool, like after practices, to shower.
At this time, most of the top male soccer players in the world were earning millions in salaries and sponsorships. With a mere $15 a day per diem and $1,000 a month stipend, Akers and her teammates were literally playing for the love of the game and the flag on their chests. But as bad as the rundown hotel in Haiti was, the trip to the stadium was even worse.
We had these, like, they're kind of like those kind of tourist buses that hotels have that kind of take you from the airport to the, you know, hotel. That's what we had to go to our games with. So we were all stuffed on this bus thing, jalopy bus thing, and all our gear was like thrown on top of the bus, like, you know, Griswold station wagon. And we had guards hanging on the sides of the bus with these huge automatic weapons. And the people were like grabbing the bus and rocking the bus and shaking. It was scary.
Now, FIFA treated all of the women's teams around the globe like garbage. In the 1970s and 80s, there was no money for the women's game. But you might think that the U.S. team based in the largest economy in the world would be given additional resources. It's America, right? But they didn't. Everyone under FIFA's umbrella, from the regional organizations to the advertisers to the government, they all refused to cough up any money. And whatever American patriotism existed in that Arizona conference room, it didn't extend to the U.S. women's national team. Everyone ignored Akers, except...
no one believed me, except for one guy.
That one guy was Mick Hoban, vice president of soccer promotions at Umbro. What's Umbro? If you're old enough, you might remember Umbro from your childhood. In the 1980s, it seemed like everyone had a pair of their brightly colored nylon drawstring soccer shorts. After a mildly successful pro soccer career in the 1970s, Hoban knew all about struggling financially to play the game you love.
Mick Hoban gave me his card and said, "I'm with Umbro. I want to sign you."
Umbro, which sponsored the Brazilian legend Pelé, signed Akers to a major deal, the first ever for a female soccer player. And for the first time in her career, Akers says she didn't have to worry about money. She wasn't rich, but she wasn't struggling either. But. She was literally the only woman in 1991 who could say that. And Akers' financial success was completely due to Mick Hoban's personal interest, not any of the lords of soccer who controlled the sport or anyone else. And yet, with the first FIFA Women's World Championship right around the corner, it looked like the safe might be cracking. The money men who had so long ignored the women's game might be ready to make an investment.
Welcome to China and a truly historic occasion.
With Chinese pop music blaring, Tiananmen Stadium in the busy metropolis of Guangzhou was buzzing. 60,000 fans stomping, cheering, and yelling. It had all the trappings of a World Cup final. On the field, Pelé, always the ambassador for the beautiful game, welcomed the two teams.
It's the FIFA Women's World Championship Final for the M&M's Cup. It's the United States versus Norway.
The presence of the greatest soccer player ever only added to the pageantry and spectacle of the moment. As the U.S. women took the pitch, their white Adidas uniforms gleamed under the stadium's lights. With their red and blue stripes, there was no doubt Team America had arrived. Look a little closer at the photos from the match, though, and you'll see how ill-fitting the uniforms really were. They were baggy and long. The sleeves were designed for athletes with far broader shoulders than any of the U.S. players.
Oh, they were guys' uniforms. They were from the guys' team.
The U.S. women's team were wearing hand-me-downs. The uniforms had once belonged to an American boys' youth squad. It was the latest in a long line of slights and snubs for a team on the cusp of a world championship. But most of Akers' teammates didn't care. She didn't really care. They were young and just happy to be playing. And the hand-me-down uniforms were, if you can believe it, a step up. 6 years earlier, the U.S. Soccer Federation gave Akers and her teammates mismatched and numberless men's practice jerseys for an international competition in Italy.
We had to sew the patches on, U.S. soccer patch. It was just kind of, here you go.
FIFA had brought the eyes of the soccer world to southern China in the fall of 1991. Still, it wasn't anywhere near the gusto reserved for the men's game. Remember, in 1978, FIFA demanded Argentina install a new color TV transmission system to make sure the World Cup and its sponsors looked perfect on TV. 13 years later, FIFA couldn't have cared less what the women were wearing. Still, a tournament of this size for women and nominally backed by FIFA had never been attempted before. It was remarkable for an organization that had not just ignored the women's game, but as the journalist Grant Wall points out, actively worked to undermine it.
For decades and decades, FIFA has viewed women's soccer with total disdain.
Until the early 1980s, FIFA had supported bans on women playing soccer both professionally and recreationally in countries like the UK, Germany, and Brazil.
It's really shameful how long it took FIFA to get on board with women's soccer.
Sexism has long been the status quo for the lords of soccer. By the mid-1980s, that began to change ever so slightly. When at the 45th FIFA Congress, Ellen Villy, a Norwegian delegate, addressed soccer's governing body. She told FIFA to stop ignoring the women's game. Surprisingly, President João Havelange and General Secretary Sepp Blatter agreed. That's how the 1991 tournament came about, with Communist China desperate to host an international sporting event and willing to foot the cost. Havelange and Blatter saw a payday for FIFA, with little to no financial risk if it failed, which, let's be honest, the men of FIFA half expected it to. The candy maker Mars signed on as the sole sponsor.
Today's game is presented by Mars Milky Way Bar. Enjoy the smooth chocolate and caramel taste of the original smoothie.
It should come as no surprise that the chauvinistic, male-dominated organization that is FIFA had some irrational concerns about women's biological sporting abilities. The men who ran FIFA thought the women should use a smaller ball, believing grown women incapable of handling a regulation-sized one. That plan was ultimately scrapped, but FIFA did shorten the women's games from the traditional 90 minutes down to 80. One U.S. player joked at the time that FIFA was afraid their ovaries would fall out. U.S. goalkeeper Mary Harvey, who would later become a senior FIFA official, never understood the decision.
Didn't make sense. Why are we playing 80-minute games? I play 90 minutes with my club. Why am I playing 80 minutes here?
And we are underway as the flashbulbs flash here in Guangzhou, China.
Throughout the tournament, the 12 teams dismantled the idea women were unable to play the sport at a high level. The final was no different.
He gets up and scores!
America's star forward Michelle Akers' physical and aggressive style was particularly impressive.
There we get to see Michelle Akers stall. So while she is so dangerous with the score off the ball being on the ground, and in this case you see her jump high in the air, redirect the ball at the goal. What a fantastic goal.
If you watch the games, you heard the commentators constantly reinforcing the idea that the women's game wasn't inferior, wasn't daintier. like so many in global soccer had long believed.
Play scrappy here in the opening stages of this second half.
As Michel's getting up off the ground, I believe it's the old knee making contact with face. And Svensson certainly wasn't pleased with that one bit.
Both Norway and the U.S. were proving just how wrong soccer's ruling elite had long been.
Seconds left in this world championship.
When the final whistle blew,
we wait simply for the whistle, and that is it! And the United States has finally won a world championship in soccer. And look at the jubilation down on the field.
Back home, the U.S. women's team was hailed as heroes and were quickly booked on pretty much every national TV show. And they were welcomed home with a New York City ticker tape parade. Sorry. I might have gotten carried away a bit. That's what should have happened. But that's not what happened. Let me see. Michelle Akers did score two goals, and the Americans did win the tournament in China. That's true. But there was no ticker tape parade or TV network opportunities. Just three journalists waiting for the team at New York's JFK Airport. Money? Nope. No $50 million payday like the men's champions. Just $500 for the players who were out of college. And they couldn't even claim a World Cup victory. FIFA refused to bestow the title of World Cup on the women's tournament. No. Instead, they went with this ridiculous and no doubt financially lucrative title.
It's the FIFA Women's World Championship Final for the M&M's Cup.
Did you catch that? The first ever FIFA Women's World Championship wasn't merely sponsored by M&M's. The trophy was literally called the M&M's Cup. Delectable chocolate morsels that never melt in your mouth, M&M's may be, but they are still candy.
It makes me want to throw up, but I also, you know, shake my head. I'm like, gosh, it just, you know, it's mind blowing. And, but it's sort of humiliating in one sense too. And also just, it's an outrage to me. And, but it's also like laughable.
The trophy's name hardly seems appropriate, especially compared to the religious reverence the men's hardware has long been given. FIFA at least had the good sense to craft the trophy in the shape of a soccer ball instead of a miniature M&M. But knowing FIFA, my guess is Mars just didn't pony up enough cash. Whatever outrage they felt at the name, Mary Harvey says she knew what she and her teammates had accomplished.
As far as I was concerned, we had won the World Cup. It just happened to be the Women's World Cup. And what FIFA chooses to call it or not call it was kind of their problem, not mine.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
They were the type of parties where you sip top-shelf liquor while standing underneath a 10-foot ice sculpture and eating hors d'oeuvres from a waitress that would be on the cover of some fashion magazine in a few months. These are the types of parties FIFA is known for, and the types of parties Michelle Akers found herself attending following Team America's victory in 1991.
I would be at these World Cups or men's events and being treated kind of like royalty.
As the best women's soccer player in the world, and with an Umbro deal to prove it, Akers was soccer royalty, rubbing elbows with the sport's ruling elite as they enjoyed the gluttony of FIFA's empire. Akers knew all of the lords of soccer, most of them by first name, Zhao, Horst, Franz, Chuck, and of course, Sepp.
I would be wearing a dress and, you know, all these black tie things, and they would stand there and look me up and down. And then Sepp, he would come over and he'd extend his hand. "Ooh, Michelle, you look so lovely. Can we see more?"
The leering, the suggestive comments, the demeaning questions, they were all features of life inside of FIFA's inner circle.
I'm in the room and this is their culture. So I accepted that part of it, to be in their culture, to try and change it.
Access to the room, as Akers described it, allowed her to see FIFA's outrageous wealth and culture up close, and how its fortune was shared with the men of the sport.
I started seeing everything the guys had, and then what we had, and when I said, okay, well, we're going to have that. And I didn't talk about it with my team, I just did it.
When it came to funding the women's game, FIFA showed little interest in spreading the wealth. It wasn't recruiting long-term sponsors or cultivating corporate partners like it was doing on the men's side. U.S. Soccer mimicked FIFA's position, insisting it couldn't sell interest in the women's game. The sponsorship opportunities, they said over and over, just weren't there. And yet American officials still demanded U.S. female soccer players wear Adidas gear at all times without providing it, like they did for the men. The women were trapped in a contractual relationship that didn't provide them with basic equipment and, at the same time, limited their ability to pursue outside sponsorships.
I said, guys, they should be giving us cleats. If they're not going to give us cleats, then they can't demand we wear a brand. When I signed with Umbro, I came into camp wearing Umbro stuff because they didn't give us anything to wear. Then U.S. Soccer got mad and said, no, you can't do that. And I said, yes, I can. Then give us gear to wear off the field.
Whispers that Akers was difficult, a troublemaker, soon followed. Younger teammates, many of whom were still in college, were urged by male U.S. officials to keep their distance.
God help them. Don't go near her because you don't want any of that rubbing off on you.
Akers, the line of attack went, wasn't standing up for her teammates, but selfishly promoting her own Umbro contract over U.S. Soccer's deal with Adidas.
There was blowout from my team to me about that. It was sort of seen as this, yeah, selfish kind of act, rubbing it in their face act, when it really wasn't.
As the 1995 Women's World Cup approached, this have versus have not competition, encouraged by the wealthy leaders of FIFA, would begin to undermine Team USA's quest for a repeat championship. It was just 10 minutes into the much-anticipated rematch.
So it's been a bright start for the Norwegians.
When Norway's Gro Espeseth set, maneuvered, and adjusted the ball ever so slightly along the white corner arc, lining up her shot in the opening minutes of the 1995 FIFA Women's World Cup semifinal, you could hear the importance of the moment as the Americans set their defense against Norway's corner kick.
They want a corner kick. Gro Espeseth will take it.
That you could even hear the Americans talking so clearly in Sweden's Aros Vallen Stadium is still surprising to me to this day.
Well, it's a difficult one for the goalkeeper, and it's in. Norway has the lead. I think it's Ann-Kristin.
It was the biggest rivalry in FIFA's blossoming Women's World Cup tournament, and the Swedish stadium was basically empty. The 4,000 or so spectators on hand were a far cry from the 60,000 who saw the U.S. and Norway play in China 4 years earlier. If the 1991 championship for the M&M's Cup was a massive step forward for the women's game, the 95 tournament was easily two steps back, not only for the U.S. side, which lost to their arch nemesis Norway in the semifinals,
and the USA find themselves a goal behind,
but also for the women's game in general. Gone were the packed Chinese stadiums, replaced instead by a few hundred family and friends in near empty Swedish venues. FIFA had done little to invest in or grow the women's game in the 4 years between the tournaments. In front of the camera, Sepp Blatter loved to praise the women's game.
The development of women's football since 91 is tremendous. The future of football will be feminine.
And FIFA conferred the title of a World Cup on the 1995 tournament. But not much else had improved. The U.S. star Mia Hamm joined Michelle Akers with a massive endorsement deal, landing Nike as her financial backer. But the economics of the sport, on the whole, still sucked. For female soccer players in both the U.S. and around the world, soccer was no road to riches. It remained an economic sacrifice. Only a select few were paid anything but a measly per diem. The 1995 Women's World Cup champions, Norway, received a $10,000 a year stipend from the Norwegian Soccer Federation. That's it. One of their top players, Linda Madeline, survived by making a living as a part-time private investigator, earning the nickname the Magnum PI of international soccer. And it was just as bad for the Americans. Most of them were still largely living off of their meager daily food per diem at a $30 a day stipend as compensation for lost wages. America and Norway were the two biggest brands in women's soccer, and they were playing to empty seats and paying out of their own pockets to do it. Behind the scenes, the women's team were pressing for a new labor contract with US Soccer. And this is why. The team said they lost. They were too focused on fighting for better treatment to focus on the game. As the 1996 Olympics approached, the leaders of the women's national team said they would not go to Atlanta without first inking a better financial deal. Even before the fax machine started beeping and slowly churning out the offer sheet, the stars of the U.S. women's national team knew what it would say. Michelle Akers, Mia Hamm, Julie Foudy, Christine Lilly, and Joy Fawcett had been negotiating, really battling with soccer officials for better resources for nearly a decade. Akers remembers.
We just want to be the best in the world. We want to have the best coaches. We want to have the best training environments. We want to have the best gear. We want to play in the best tournaments. We want to develop as athletes. We want that same opportunity. So to me, it was all about gaining equal access to that.
But this offer, now staring them in black and white, was as disappointing as it was unacceptable. Win gold at the 1996 Atlanta Olympics or get nothing. No bonus for silver, and certainly no money for bronze. It was in stark contrast to the men's deal, which paid out bonuses for each win. And the men, they weren't even expected to medal. The 1996 Olympics may not have officially been a FIFA event, but U.S. soccer was a FIFA member. The decision by the Lords of Soccer to limit financial support to the women's game set the tone for all soccer federations. It allowed U.S. soccer to cry poverty when it came to the women's team, while at the same time ramping up spending on the men's side. It was a particularly unequal system, since the U.S. women's side had established itself as the premier team in the world. Former U.S. goalkeeper Mary Harvey says the team felt second class.
It hurt sometimes when we saw things that, you know, no matter kind of what we did, we didn't see the economic benefit of it.
By the time the contract offer came in, Akers and her teammates had had enough.
We need, you know, basic things that the men's team had had for a long time, and U.S. soccer said no.
With the Atlanta Olympics just months away, for the first time, the U.S. women had leverage. Their leverage? The star players. Mary Harvey remembers they took the lead in the negotiations.
The players who were starting players who had more leverage than the rest of us did this on behalf of all of us because they wanted us to have better conditions.
Starting midfielder Julie Foudy reviewed the offer. She crossed out the Olympic bonus clauses and faxed back the contract. The message was simple. Do better. Pay us what we're worth. Like FIFA, U.S. soccer had never really contemplated what women's soccer was worth. The women's side was viewed as a financial drain. And so in retaliation for refusing its offer, U.S. soccer canceled the team's flights to an upcoming training camp, locking out the 9 most important players on the U.S. women's team. U.S. soccer then went on the offensive in the media, attacking the stars of the team.
They tried everything they could to demean us and basically called us little girls.
The women held strong. U.S. soccer wanted gold. They needed it. And eventually, they caved, agreeing not only to provide bonuses for gold, silver, and bronze, but also agreeing to provide pregnancy leave and nannies for players with small children.
U.S. soccer realized they couldn't bully us or intimidate. It was going to be a bigger game than just these little girls acting out. This was going to be a legal battle against giants.
Ironically, U.S. soccer was rewarded with something far greater than just a gold medal, which the U.S. women won. 76,000 rabid and passionate fans were on hand to watch the U.S. women's game, proving there was a gigantic, untapped market for women's soccer. Here's Mary Harvey.
We weren't a curtain raiser. We were the event. That's a big deal. And FIFA was there. FIFA saw that.
On June 19th, 1999, the traffic on the Jersey Turnpike was brutal, even worse than usual. When Team USA's bus did move, it was only a few feet at a time, jolting forward and then jerking to a stop. The team was anxious to get to New Jersey's Meadowlands Stadium for the first game of the 1999 World Cup. They had spent the last year training and doing every TV interview and commercial they could to sell tickets and build anticipation. Corporate America had noticed, and the stars of the team were everywhere.
I can be champion of Women's World Cup soccer.
I can be a goalie.
Like Soccer Barbie.
Or a power forward.
Like me.
It's Mia Hamm.
Are you ready for Women's World Cup soccer?
Body shoot. Goal!
Brought to you by Bud Light.
After the heroics of the 1996 Olympics, interest in women's soccer had surged. FIFA, however, remain skeptical that a Women's World Cup could attract global attention.
So we were up against a prejudice, an old way of thinking.
That's Donna De Verona, a former Olympic swimmer and chair of the 1999 Women's World Cup Organizing Committee. That skepticism from FIFA weighed on the players, who remembered the empty stadiums 4 years earlier in Sweden. As they pulled into the Meadowlands parking lot, they couldn't believe their eyes.
Americans are cheering on this team in this sport unlike just about any other.
They heard the screams of Go USA and of We Love You, Mia. Yeah!
My favorite player is Mia Hamm.
Mia worship.
And then saw thousands of fans primed and ready to go, young girls in white women's jerseys.
It's not just soccer moms and their kids attending games.
Teenage boys with their shirts off and Team USA painted across their chests.
Games are boring, you just keep scoring. Please don't take my Mia away.
The opening match was a sellout. 77,000 fans filled the stadium, and the excitement only grew as Team USA kept scoring.
Here's Edgars! Go! And bends it in! Header! Go! Christine Lloyd! Christine! Go!
And winning.
The USA is going to the final of the World Cup!
In the summer of 1999, the sports world was consumed by the Women's World Cup. Not just the US team, but the entire slate of matches. The average attendance for the 32 games was 37,000 fans, with more than 78,000 on hand to watch Mexico and Brazil. By comparison, a year earlier in France, the average attendance at the Men's World Cup was roughly 43,000 people per match. By any measure, this was a success. But these crowds at the 1999 Women's World Cup, they almost didn't happen.
The international organization that governs soccer, FIFA, feared stadiums would be half empty.
Steven Vanderpool, the head of media relations for the 1999 Women's World Cup, told me FIFA didn't believe there was any real interest.
FIFA really envisioned a smaller event, a tournament that was held in smaller stadiums, basically in the eastern part of the United States. Thankfully, the people that were involved with the bid committee for the Women's World Cup and the people that ran it had worked on the 99 World Cup for the men and knew what was possible.
FIFA didn't believe women soccer players could draw sizable crowds. The Lords of Soccer wanted a safe event in small 5 to 10,000 seat stadiums. Definitely not New Jersey's massive Meadowlands or California's Grand Canyon-like Rose Bowl. World Cup organizers like Donna De Verona instead bet big and ignored FIFA, believing the interest was there.
I think it has to do with chauvinism and the fact that the FIFA membership wants to protect the men's game. And some of them felt if the women encroach on the game, it somehow undermines the credibility of the men's game.
FIFA didn't argue or try to stop them, but they didn't do much to help either.
The American public believed in us, but a lot of the top sponsors didn't.
Even as ticket sales were steadily growing in the months before the opening game, FIFA's powerful marketing arm once again stayed on the sidelines, unwilling to help the women's brand and, let's be honest, probably leaving money on the table.
We had to really struggle with the sponsors to get them to activate the sponsorship. Many didn't. They just didn't believe we could do it.
Some global brands like McDonald's, Fuji, and Gillette ultimately did sign up as advertisers, but reluctantly. And even when they did sign sponsorship deals, they went small. That was a mistake, Vanderpool says.
When we sold out the opening game, I think it was such an eye-opener to everybody in the world.
By the time the tournament got underway,
the pitch of World Cup fever has reached a crescendo in just 3 short weeks.
Everyone was scrambling to find ways to ride the wave of anticipation. Even ESPN and ABC, FIFA's official broadcast partners, had to rework their TV schedules to capitalize on the interest.
This is the biggest game in the lives of these USA players, and you could say that for China too, USA in white.
In front of a record 90,000 fans, the 1999 Women's World Cup final was nothing short of extraordinary.
Here's Akers. Michelle Akers guns it long, but it's right at Gao Hong. And yes, she can score from there.
Exciting, hard-fought, 120 minutes of utterly gripping athleticism played under the hot California sun in the historic Rose Bowl Stadium. And it would end in one of the most spectacular moments in sports history.
Referee has just looked at the watch. That's it. The winner of the 1999 Women's World Cup will be decided on penalty kicks.
When the whistle blew, the game was tied 0-0. One by one, China and the U.S. came to the line to take their penalty kicks. They found themselves tied once again 4-4, with a single U.S. player left to take her shot.
Chastain will take it. She missed a penalty kick against China in the Algarve Cup, and they lost that game.
Then, Brandi Chastain just drilled the penalty kick past China's goal.
Go!
Chastain sprinted and then dropped to her knees, ripping off her jersey and flexing her arms in an explosion of pure celebration. It is to this day one of the most iconic moments, not just in women's sports, but in all of sports. The 1999 Women's World Cup was a success. It set records in both live attendance and TV audience. And it even turned a profit of $4 million on a paltry $30 million budget. Still, while FIFA president Sepp Blatter was ecstatic, Donna De Verona said some FIFA members still refused to believe there was a market for women's soccer outside of the U.S. They wouldn't believe their own eyes.
Some of the FIFA members says, after we sold it out and it was so exciting, not in my country. This is not going to happen in my country.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced.
Bring it!
Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL Schedule Release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule-release to learn more.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
The photos had all the blood and gore of a crime scene. In one photo, shins with his skin sheared off. In another, a once white Nike sock saturated with blood from knee to ankle. The photos had been tweeted out in 2013 by American Sydney LaRue and Australian Sam Kerr, two of the best female soccer players in the world. To say they were angry would be an understatement.
Some of the world's top female soccer players are fuming. They may have to play on artificial grass in next year's Women's World Cup finals in Canada.
Canada had been awarded the upcoming 2015 Women's World Cup, and FIFA had approved a decision to play most of the games not on grass, but on synthetic, skin-ripping, blood-inducing plastic turf. Players like all-time leading U.S. scorer Abby Wambach were pissed and speaking out.
Should be grass stains, not blood.
It was almost 25 years since the first women's tournament in China, and once again, the women's side was having to speak out about unequal treatment. The stars of the women's game rightfully argued the men would never be subjected to a playing surface as harsh as turf.
It is a gender equality issue. No chance would the men ever play a World Cup on turf, and I think that the women are being treated as guinea pigs.
FIFA remained unmoved by the social media pressure, and in 2014, 81 players from more than a dozen countries sued FIFA and the Canadian Soccer Federation for gender discrimination. It was the type of bad PR FIFA's embattled but all-powerful president Sepp Blatter didn't need, with the rumors of vote-buying, bribery, and corruption, and a U.S. federal probe swirling around. And there was an easy fix. For a couple $1 million, Canada's skin-ripping, artificial fields could be retrofitted and replaced by soft, lush, safe grass. FIFA had made a profit of $4 billion on the previous 2014 Men's World Cup in Brazil and had billions in the bank. Money wasn't the issue. Sexism was.
The Men's World Cup was given brand new stadiums, brand new venues around Brazil, and all we're asking is for a great surface to play on.
Fighting the women on this issue seems such a tone-deaf, short-sighted decision, especially for Blatter, who had long prided himself as the original supporter inside FIFA of the women's game.
Women's football is definitely my, I wouldn't say my baby, but I consider myself a little bit as a godfather of the organization of women's football in FIFA.
As an organization, FIFA had spent most of the last four decades shortchanging the women's game. Still, Mary Harvey, the U.S. women's goalie in the early 1990s who lived through years of pathetic resources, remembers Blatter as often the lone voice of support for the women's competition.
You know, I saw Blatter do some things that helped advance women's football.
After her playing career wrapped up, Harvey joined FIFA in 2003 as the director of development and remembers pushing for the creation of an under-17 Women's World Cup like the men had.
I went into the president's office and I lobbied for it.
Blatter not only listened, but decided seemingly unilaterally to follow Harvey's advice and announced his decision at an executive committee meeting.
We're doing this. Anybody object? When the FIFA president says that, right, who's dumb enough to actually open their mouth and say something? The answer is nobody. But I mean, that's an example of where he said, we're doing this.
Donna De Verona, the chair of the 1999 Women's World Cup, also remembers Blatter as someone who could plant a seed of an idea within FIFA and make it happen.
Sepp had his negative aspects, but he was a visionary. He wasn't afraid to say that stuff. So he planted a seed, but were they going to be 1,000% behind it and put the money where the mouth is? No.
At the same time, Blatter would also make public comments that would undermine the women's game, as he did in 2004.
Recently, he was asked, how should women's soccer be made more popular? He said, well, they should wear shorter shorts.
If Blatter and FIFA wanted to make the changes to Canada's field turf, it would have happened. But it didn't. And instead, FIFA threatened to suspend any player who challenged in court FIFA's artificial turf mandate. The women dropped the lawsuit, and FIFA agreed in the future never to host a tournament on artificial grass. It was a small consolation for the players who still had to face plastic fields and bloody kneecaps. After 17 years at the helm of international soccer, it's hard to know where Sepp Blatter begins and FIFA ends. The two had been intimately linked for decades. FIFA was his baby. Nowhere was this more true, says journalist Grant Wall, than on the women's side of the sport.
He takes a lot of pride in the role that he had in creating the first Women's World Cup hosted by FIFA. But FIFA had done a terrible job with women's soccer over the decades.
Then, almost overnight, Blatter was gone. Pushed out by the sport's sponsors in 2015 under a shadow of corruption.
FIFA president Sepp Blatter has resigned.
With Blatter gone, and after more than a dozen senior soccer officials were indicted by the U.S. Department of Justice, there was optimism this would lead to a new attitude within FIFA on issues of equality. Former U.S. star turned TV analyst Julie Foudy tweeted, quote, "Hallelujah, Sepp Blatter is out," unquote. The U.S. star Carly Lloyd was optimistic that decades of sexism and organizational inequality might soon be a thing of the past.
I think it's going to be really, really good for our game. Mm-hmm. And I think the next leader, person in charge, really needs to step in and create equal rights for men and women.
FIFA does have a new human rights policy and a female general secretary. However, when Blatter's replacement, Gianni Infantino, stepped forward to present the U.S. women their World Cup trophy in France in 2019, a deluge of boos rained down on him. Fans were angry at the seemingly endless crappy treatment women suffered at FIFA's hands. Little, it seems, has changed. Corruption is still a problem at FIFA. And as Mary Harvey pointed out, it's not just what the corrupt FIFA members did with the money. It's what they didn't do.
I mean, I got pretty angry because you've been told your whole life women's football can't have this or you can't have that because there's no money. And then one day you lift the veil and see what people were doing with the money. It makes you pretty angry.
As journalist Grant Wall explains, the issues of inequality within FIFA remain pronounced.
The legacy of all of that is still there today, where FIFA likes to say it's enlightened today about women's soccer, but these entrenched attitudes from men inside FIFA toward the sport of women's soccer are still there, I'm told.
FIFA has significantly increased the prize money for the women's game, setting aside $30 million for the 2019 Women's World Cup. As the winners, the U.S. team walked away with a $4 million payday, more than double the 2015 award, and a massive step forward from the pay-to-play days of the early 1990s. But it's still a paltry amount compared to the men whose prize pool in 2018 was $400 million, with the French team earning a staggering $38 million for its victory. FIFA's attitude has long been, the Men's World Cup makes more money, and they should enjoy a larger payday. However, FIFA is a nonprofit, and its mandate is to support soccer around the world. That mandate doesn't distinguish between the men's game and the women's game. Increasingly, FIFA is out of step with the sporting world. Many other nonprofits that oversee both men's and women's sports, particularly in tennis, have already started to even out prize money. Wimbledon, the French Open, the US Open. There's a business case to be made to invest more in women's soccer. The Men's World Cup is likely only to grow incrementally in the future. It's already a ratings behemoth. However, there's a lot of growth left on the women's side. Want proof? In 2022, 92,000 fans crowded into Camp Nou Stadium in Barcelona for a semifinal match between Barcelona and Wolfsburg, breaking the record set back in 1999 at the Women's World Cup final. Barcelona FC has poured money into their women's team, and the results speak for themselves. Serious investment by others would likely lead to greater revenues, which FIFA should want.
There's still a lot of frustration in the women's soccer community that not only did FIFA not support women's soccer for decades, they're still not doing nearly enough to make the Women's World Cup into the type of money-making extravaganza that they did with the Men's World Cup.
However, Gianni Infantino is just as dismissive of the women's game as his predecessors were, defending the pay imbalance by sarcastically saying, maybe one day women's football will generate more than men's football. Not only is that unlikely to happen, given the sheer popularity of the men's game, but FIFA and its regional partners around the world are still actively working to prevent any real investment in the women's sport. Local federations like CONCACAF or CONMEBOL are only asked to spend 15% of the $900 million global development budget on the women's game. Mary Harvey, the former U.S. goalie and FIFA development official, believes FIFA should have treated the women's game in the late 1990s similar to a growth stock like Google or Amazon.
I think it could be much bigger, or it could have been bigger faster, if maybe it had been treated as a high growth opportunity earlier.
FIFA, though a humble nonprofit on paper, has proven at the end of the day it cares most about maximizing profit. So it's never too late to embrace that investment strategy.
It's very clear that FIFA is leaving money on the table. They haven't maximized what's out there potentially for the Women's World Cup and the sport on a regular basis.
I think Mary Harvey said it best. A corrupt organization busy stuffing money into its suit pockets is not investing wisely in the future. But that can change. The potential growth on the women's side is not just in revenue, but in goodwill, in karma. FIFA, bruised and battered by scandal, has a chance to do the right thing in a global way. That's not just good public relations. It's just plain good. And that, more than anything, is what the beautiful game needs now. And the thing is, the calls for change aren't going to stop. In February of 2022, U.S. Soccer and the women's national team reached an agreement to pay $24 million in back pay and to close the pay gap between the men's and women's sides. The agreement settles a gender discrimination lawsuit filed in 2019, and it puts the onus on FIFA to either equalize pay between the men's and women's teams or force the U.S. men's side to take a pay cut to make up the gap. Though, it remains to be seen how this will play out. This kind of pressure is needed, Michelle Aker says, to force FIFA to reckon with its past discrimination of women.
They should be uncomfortable. They should change, and I shouldn't have to ask for that. Change doesn't happen unless it makes people uncomfortable, unless it's demanded, unless it's radicalized almost. You have to force change. You can't be nice about asking for equality. For me to even say ask for equality is just ridiculous.
On the next episode of The Lords of Soccer, the eyes of the world are on Qatar, the host of the 2022 Men's World Cup. The tiny nation is furiously building infrastructure to handle the tournament, but at a horrific cost. Is FIFA ready to own up to the scandal in the desert? The Lords of Soccer, How FIFA Stole the Beautiful Game, is an Inside Voices Media production in conjunction with iHeartRadio. The series was written and executive produced by Gary Scott and me, Connor Powell. Logan Heftel and Katie McMurrin provided the sound design with assistance from JC Swadek and Jake Bluenote. Alec Cowan is our associate producer, and Jeffrey Katz was our story editor. Our fact checker is Alexa O'Brien. And thanks to Miles Gray, who produced this series for iHeartRadio. If you have any comments or questions, please reach out. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Connor M. Powell. And Gary is at Gary Robert Scott. And if you have any stories about FIFA, let us know. If you like what you hear, please give us a shout out at the hashtag Lords of Soccer.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Ocean by H10 Hotels and do your deal at cheapcaribbean.com.